Okay, good morning. Welcome to our Randolph Chef Revenge of the California Luncheon here in Sacramento. We're very happy that you all are able to be here with us. What we're going to do this morning is basically talk about our program, and Deb Meyer is here, and we're anticipating Tony Candela to be here in a moment. But anyway, is Hazel back yet? Ah, there she is. Good timing. Listen, I just wanted to point out to some of you, and a lot of you don't know, that the Randolph Chef Revenge of California, we are an affiliate of the national organization, the Randolph Chef Revenge of America. And we're also a state affiliate of the California Council of the Blind. And as you know, these various blind organizations are a advocacy and a political group of people that do some legislative work as well as raise the consciousness of the various agencies within our department that we have and other endeavors too. And this year, and really we have been fairly active, but this year in particular we are going to be more active. The Randolph Chef Revenge of California, and most of you have already received a couple of newsletters and newslines that we are sending out. Our goal is to send out this information every month, at least every month or every 3 weeks, because communications is so important for all of us, you know, to be informed of what's happening, what the various problems are in the program, and what we can do to solve these problems. And CBPC is there to help the vendors, to advocate for the vendors, but also it doesn't hurt to have other blind organizations such as RSVP participate also. And our purpose is to educate as well as to, you know, try to see if we can find a solution to a number of problems in our program. And most of us know over the years that we have had many problems, and you know, some of the problems are beginning to shape, you know, take into shape and take form, but there's still a lot that needs to be done. And we want to be there to help the vendors and to educate the vendors as well as inform the department of certain major problems that we have. So at this time, what I'd like to do is introduce you to Hazel Harmon. And she's going to go around and have everybody introduce themselves as to who is here. Hazel?
Hi, guys. I'm the lady that you put the money to for your lovely lunch. But anyway, before I get started going around, we're still missing, I know, like 4 or 5 people. So while we're waiting, I mean, we're going to go around anyway and introduce ourselves. But while we're waiting, since I'm editor of the Vendor Scope, that's a national magazine that goes out to all the Randolph Shepherd vendors in the nation. And this year, Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California made arrangements for all of you to receive the next 4 copies for the next year. Now, the latest issue has just come out, and some of you will not get it in the large print format this issue, but then it's actually starting with the next issue because I was a little busy and got your names in on the last day, of course. So anyway, I did bring 8 CD copies of the latest issue, which has just come out this week, as well as 5 cassette copies. But if you guys prefer to get it in an accessible text version, before you leave, let me know, and I can make arrangements for you all to get that version, as well as if you prefer the large print version electronically, let me know, and I'll get that version sent to you. The large print version has pictures. The accessible text version, of course, doesn't have them, but they all have the same information in it. This issue that has just come out, we reviewed a speech by Suzanne Mitchell, who is a director in RSA in Washington, D.C. She gave a speech, a really good speech, about Randolph Shepherd today. So if you get the VendorScope, read that article, as well as Dr. Thomas Finch, who is an acting director for RSA in Washington, was our keynote speaker. Also read that article because it hits home on the direction, the future of the Randolph Shepherd program in our nation. And the key common thread through both of their speeches was transparency. And transparency is really important right now. They want the vendors to poke their program administrators into being more transparent. Here we go. Deb's going to get poked. Into being more transparent to the vendors about where the funds are going, what the direction they're doing. And Dr. Thomas Finch also indicated that the success of the Randolph Shepherd program, they've sort of ignored it in Washington, D.C. over the past decade or so, but there is a new direction planned for the Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America. So anyway, there's lots of other good articles. Mitch Pomerantz is in there. He gave a wonderful speech about the direction for ACB. And oh yes, and as we're being introduced personally, Joni Patchy made arrangements and got us goodie bags, and the goodie bags have been provided by Benmark, Atnip, and was it Kraft? Kraft, out of Sacramento. And so we really want to thank these distributors. When you see them, let them know that you were at the RSVC luncheon and you really appreciated the goodie bag. Yes, Deb. Oh, yes, yes, yeah. There's so much. No. This new issue. Yeah. Yeah. And Artis Bazin, who's here, she compiled that article about the IRS tips, which are really good because there have been some changes in IRS rulings for us blind vendors as well. And then Artis always puts an article in the vendor scope, which is really interesting. In fact, Roy started reading it and decided it was one of his favorites, and it's called What's New? And she literally describes what's new electronically or program-wise for blind vendors or blind people. So pay attention to that last article in the Vendor Scope calling what's saying it's what's new. It's a great article, and a lot of people really enjoy reading that one too. In fact, there's so much in the Vendor Scope, it's a good magazine. So if you have an accessible program, get it that way. Let me know. I can get CDs, cassettes, whatever format you want, it can come to you, and then enjoy it, because we think that RSVC can be a messenger for you guys on the national level and get that information out to you. Okay, here we go. Gina, you want to help me with those goodie bags? I'm going to number it. Okay. I'm going to start our introductions at this table where I'm standing. And to my right is a really good vendor in this program. Here we go.
Hi, I'm James Dirk.
Debbie Dirk.
Hi, yes, I'm Caltrans on Alhambra and R in Sacramento.
I have an espresso bar in the Secretary of State building.
Ron Long, East End Project, Sacramento.
Hi, this is Richard Retta, Department of Rehabilitation and Youth Transition Coordinator.
Yes, I'm Paul Patchy, also president of the AC Capital Chapter, and my location right now is the Errol Miller Justice Center.
I'm Joni Patchy, and I have a little tiny stands at EDD on Capital.
Paul really didn't mention, he's going to be the new roadside rest vendor up at Gold Run, and I think he's going to be really successful up there. Okay, here we go.
Continue on here. I'm Roy Harmon. My location is Oceanside, California.
This is David Hanlon, and my location is at Spey War in San Diego, snack bar on a military base.
I'm Artis Bazin. I'm a former vendor in Iowa, but I now have a different business, Bazin Communications. I'm a business coach and writer.
I'm Kevin Berkley. I'm Artis Bazin's guest today and every day.
Actually, we need to say congratulations to Kevin and Artis. They're going to be getting married next month. So.
Deb Meyer, BEP Program Manager.
If you guys didn't hear that, that's Gary Machado from Modesto. And
I'm Andy Brown from Sacramento.
I'm Mark.
I'm Reed Stanley-Jones.
Hi, I'm Maria Burling.
Guys, you have to hold the microphone closer to your little lips. That was Marie Burley, the better half of this individual.
Steve Burley, Oakland Postal Facility.
Steve Webb, licensed vendor. I live in San Jose, California.
John Friesen, usually behind the eight ball.
Janice Friesen, CVPC Executive Secretary.
Sandy Brown, I belong to Andy.
There's someone else that came in the room from the table that we've already done, and this is our CCB President.
Jeff Tom, CCB President.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
Brandon Wilcox. I have the Caltrans building, 1128 Street.
I'm Brandon Wilcox's wife, Becky Wilcox.
I'm Bessie Dunn, the delegate from this spot.
I'm Jose Castro from this set.
Okay, if you didn't hear that, we had Bessie Dunn, who's a delegate from Riverside, and Mildred Vassell, who's from Merced. They've decided to come in and see what this RSVC luncheon is all about. Plus, one of my favorite people here.
Hello, I'm Jacqueline Jackson, and I am a 1099er. So I'm a consultant, and I do fund development for nonprofits.
And you are?
Leonel Cabral from Bateson Building.
Oh, hi, Leonel. This is Leonel Cabral, vendor from, what did you say, Dixon? Oh, Bateson Building. And Gary Crocker sends his best to you. and I have all these little messages to give to people. And then I think I saw, oh, Darren, did you introduce yourself yet?
Okay.
Darren Simon, vendor at Board of Visualization Building.
Hi, Tony Candela, Deputy Director of Specialized Services for the Department of Rehabilitation.
Hey, Tony. I think that pretty much introduces everybody who's here so far. Okay, was there... before I give the microphone back to David, we do have a raffle, and I'm going to walk around and give you a number. And please remember that number, or you're not going to win it. Okay? Hold on.
Okay. Listen, before I introduce Roy Harmon, the Vice President of RSVC, I want to recognize someone that has been very, very, very dedicated to the vending program and to her husband. And she's going to retire in September, and I want us to recognize and appreciate Janice Friesen. Thank you, Janice, for your many years of hard work, and you know, we really appreciate we do appreciate you very much. Also, I also want to recognize a person in the California Council of the Blind organization that has been a tremendous supporter of the vending program and of RSVC. And he's only going to be here a short time, but you've already heard his introduction of himself. And also, I want to acknowledge and recognize Jeff Tom for his dedication. Oh, sure. Jeff, go ahead.
Oh. Jeff will pop on.
Okay, Jeff, I'm coming over with the microphone. Okay. Jeff asked if he could say a few words. Here we go.
I don't have anything overly intellectual to say at this point, except because I'm trying to swallow my lettuce before I launch into this. I just want to say that CCB is here to serve you vendors, and we are here to try and help you get what you need. So come to us. It's not important whether, of course, we want you all as members, but it's not important whether you are members of RSVC. We're here with all the leaders of RSVC to help you and to help ensure that BEP is as successful as it can possibly be. So that's what we are here to do. Take advantage of. You'll all come to know over time our new advocate in Sacramento, Frank Welty, and he and I will be working and doing whatever it is that you feel must be done to make BEP maximize its potential. And with that, I thank you very much and turn it back to Dave.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. One thing that I wanted to, before I introduce Roy, is that we made a decision to sponsor and to enable every vendor in the program to be a member of RSVC. And that was done in order to receive the vendor scope and to receive other information in our organization. So technically, we do have 112 members of RSVC.
So you're going to be the biggest affiliate in the state, I think.
Very good.
Or second biggest, maybe.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. You know that also makes you guys members of CCB. So, and like Jeff said, if you need to talk to Jeff or any members of the board of CCB, they're available and willing to listen. And me too. Anyway, I'd like to introduce to you Roy Harmon. He's going to give a sort of a summary and a brief report on RSVC's activity.
It's been a long year for us. I guess it's time to throw a little mud. Okay. No, I'd rather just do it this way. It's time to throw some mud. Everything's been going really good so far. So, RSVC has been involved for some time now since its reorganization several years back at the federal level. And I've been just participating with RSVA on the national level. Some of you that do get the vendor scope probably recognize some of my articles I put in there. And it's going to continue. And I've also been named by Charles Blazer as the ad hoc committee chairperson on rest areas throughout the country. There's been concern recently of shutting down facilities due to budget cuts and whatever reason. So our ad hoc committee consists of rest area vendors throughout the nation, and we provide information to SLAs and to vendors who think that their locations are going to be in jeopardy. We do a lot of research to provide all this information that you can obtain through the website, RCA website. And that's what we've been busy doing. There has been a lot of talk, especially at the last Sagebrush, about the set-aside funds. Where is it? Where is it going? There are many, many statesmen in the union that use the set-aside funds properly. Their states are blossoming. They're full of vendors in all kinds of locations, rest areas, prisons, federal prisons as well as states. And it's just incredible that this is going on when in California this is not. Several years back, some of you can remember, things changed pretty radically for October. And we have been trying to get some forward movement. And one of the actions that we've been taking is concerning the set-aside fees. I want to keep this brief because we've got a lot to do yesterday. It is a question of CBPC to the department regularly. Where is our financial report? It's supposed to be quarterly. It hasn't occurred. It hasn't occurred for some 15 years. And it does state clearly in the Randolph Separate Act that it's section 107B-1 that every vendor in this state, every licensed vendor, is entitled to having a fiscal report from the department, not only dollars and cents, but locations, closing locations, new locations coming up, how many students are coming into the program, are there going to be facilities for these people? I don't know. It doesn't look that way. We have 15 students coming up this year, and are there going to be locations for these new students? We also have, those of you that are not that familiar with the Randolph Separate Act, 107 Section D, which points out that if there is a facility out there, that we should have a facility, we should have a vendor, whether it's a snack bar, cafeteria, or vending, or even commissions. This clearly states that it's the department's responsibility to go after them. And if they do not do this, they have the right to, if the location denies us, they should file arbitration with the Secretary of Education. This has not been done. I know this personally because of a location up in the valley at Lawrence Livermore Laboratories. The RFP came out on the facility. It was ignored by the department after pressure from CBPC. They finally got in there and pursued it. And it was so late in the day, there was no way that they could possibly have gotten in there correctly and gotten a vendor chosen. And so as of now, we still don't have anybody in that facility. We're not even receiving commissions. One last thing. On April the 1st, RSVC received a memo from Deb Meyer stating that we have been receiving commissions from Sandia, which is the Department of Energy, but she didn't say how long we've been receiving them. Has it been years? Has it been weeks? Maybe even a day. But this subject has come up several times at QLDC, one of our subcommittees, and there was never, ever any mention of receiving any kind of commission from these locations at all. And we're looking forward to move on. We're looking forward to getting into federal prisons in California. Homeland Security is sitting out there waiting for us. These are all locations that you're entitled to and we should have. And if we have 15 new students coming in, we're going to have to develop this facility. I think I'll sign off. We're going to have a Q&A after our speakers. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rory. Right now, there are you. Right now, I'd like to introduce you, and he spoke in L.A. 6 months ago, I guess, regarding vendors sponsoring or I don't know how you said it. I guess sponsoring a student, you know, a high school student to work in your facility to, you know, more or less to initiate and to not necessarily train the person, but to let them know what it's like to be in business, you know, to be a blind business person or you know, man and woman running the program. So right now I'd like to introduce you to Richard Ruida.
Well, good morning or good afternoon. Thank you for having me back. I'll try to keep this under an hour. I mean, 2 or 5 minutes like I did last fall. Thank you for having me back. And in brief, I'm the Youth Transition Coordinator for Blindfield Services. And in 2006, we started doing the BEPS, Business Enterprise Program, Youth Employment Program. So we're entering our fourth summer where we have vendors such as yourself work alongside high school students who are visually impaired who have provided with their first ever work experience opportunity for the summer. And what I'm here to do is basically give a quick plug is to, I want to thank people like Joni, Catchy, and others in the room who have put up students. How many students have you worked with so far, Joni? This is 3, 7, 10? Wow. Think Joni's, give Joni a hand. Joni's, I have her speak at every opportunity I get, and she speaks better than I do, but I really want to thank Joni and others who have worked with many students, unduplicated for many times in getting students to work, getting students a hands-on, tangible experience, not just saying here, do this or do that, but having them troubleshoot, having them work with cash, having them interact, get social skills. We are working with Junior Blind in Los Angeles, the Society for the Blind here in town, I believe the Valley Center in Fresno and the Lighthouse in San Francisco. We don't want to limit it to those areas. We want to expand the Riverside, San Diego, Orange County, and it's up to vendors such as yourself to work with us. We can work in any informal way we can. If you're willing to host a student who's blind, let's say age 16, 17, 18, who's never had a work experience, but who has the competencies to work alongside you, to be mentored by you, to get a real hands-on work experience for 5 weeks in the summer initially, we would really, really appreciate that. It's been positive. I think we've had over like 25 students in the past 3 years being provided a work experience. We have even have counselors in the audience such as Therese Gardner and is it Modesto or Merced? Modesto and Merced, and she's beginning to, in the rural areas, work with vendors kind of off the site that we mentioned to get kids work experience. So it's even counselors like Therese working in the rural areas. So if you think you have to work in one of the four major cities I talked about, we don't. We just really want to get kids out there, even if you're up in Chico or out in Bakersfield or other places. We really want to get students work experience. I mean, think back to your first job you had when you were 16. You know, who helped you get that job, whether you were sighted or blind at the time? And think about students coming up who may want a BEP operator down the line or who may just want to have that as a work experience so that they can boast in college and in their career that, hey, I have this job, I know what it's like, and I don't want to do it ever again, or, hey, this is what I want to do. My contact information, I'm based out of the Oakland office. I also work out of the School for the Blind, one of the many jobs I have. I am at 510-622-3083. Dave Hamlin can get a hold of me. He invited me here, and so you can get a hold of me through him. I will be here at the convention until tomorrow, and my email address is raruega@dor.ca.gov. But it's a real meaningful experience. The students, in many cases, get paid or get a stipend. We're working creatively to get students paid in the ways that we are limited, but we want to get them the work experience. And, yes, you get $500 out of it for for working with them. So that's a carrot for you. Thank you, David. Thank you, Hazel.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Richard. Okay, thank you, Richard. Right now, I'd like to introduce you guys, and of course, we all know, and I think this is going on 4 years now, that Tony has been the Deputy Director for Field Services, and we have had many hours of discussion and controversy and everything else, but it makes life interesting, and so anyway, let's all clap for Tony Candela.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's really fun to come to this event, and you guys always have the best food, too, so I really appreciate it. I would like to just say a few words about what we're doing at the Department of Rehabilitation, about the program, and to first and foremost, sing the praises of the processes that we're developing, always improving them. Always need to do better, but we're getting better at a more consistent everyday interaction with vendors, with the policy committee, with RSVP, when stuff is going on. If you're working in state service these days, it's just a frenetic pace. But when stuff is going on, if we are doing what we're supposed to do, and if we have the time to do it, we're always in consultation with the policy committee to make sure that anything that we're thinking about doing is run past the vendors. So first and foremost, I want to thank our program manager, Deb Meyer, for religiously meeting with the vendors, especially the vendors' policy committee, especially the executive committee of the policy committee. And that's very important. The chair of the policy committee's rules subcommittee, Harry Deegan, and I spent a lot of time together over the last year to develop a protocol, a way of doing business for the concept of active participation. And basically, the Randolph-Shepard Law says that the vendors will actively participate in conversations and discussions having to do with any of the major decisions that administration of the Randolph-Shepard program makes. And that active participation protocol is kind of like a manifesto, kind of a pledge for both the vendors and for the DEC staff on how we will interact. And under what circumstances will we be talking about certain things? And should something go awry with those conversations, rather than pouncing on each other right away, we'll actually have a way of reconnecting and a way of talking things out, even about the discussion not having taken place. We're even going to talk about that first, instead of right away, jumping into some kind of an adversarial relationship. We are going to try to stay on the positive side until and heaven forbid, something doesn't quite work out where adversarial relationships have to happen. That's usually not something that happens. Every once in a while, though, people haven't fully communicated, and I think that is the biggest danger we all face. I look at our luncheon today as a very positive experience. Randolph-Shepard vendors in California get together every 6 months for this kind of an event. We have our luncheon here, and I think this is just one more example of how we share the responsibility for communicating with each other. So I'm very happy at a fundamental level to report that we are doing better in that very key thing, communication. Everything else, some of the stuff that Roy brought up, everything else jumps from our ability to talk to each other. So, rather than going into things point by point in my little talk to you today, I just want to leave you at that very, very global level of I think we're doing better than ever at talking to each other. Thank you. Yeah, please applaud yourselves for the talking. I got one more point I want to make to you. I want to thank not only Deb for all of her hard work, but I just whispered this to Deb. I leaned over to her and said, that guy, Richard Rueda, is one of our most valued employees. And so I want you to give him a hand. Now, you know, if for no other reason is that he is taking care of what I consider to be my baby. The BEPYEP program, the Business Enterprise Youth Employment Program, is something that I transported here from New York, and it was like kind of like one of the only big things I've ever managed to accomplish since coming to DOR, that I had, you know, so much of my own soul in. It was to do something to improve our ability in DOR, and especially in the Blind Field Services Unit, to help our youngsters get jobs, especially their starter jobs. And so what the BEPYEP is all about, the stuff that Richard was just talking to you about, has to do with all of our future. It has to do with taking youngsters with visual impairments and getting them into the world of work. And many of the kids out there have very little chance, very little opportunity to get their first job. And if they don't get their first job, then they're not going to get their second job. And if eventually when they are all grown up and they're ready to enter the adult world, they haven't even had one opportunity to work yet, the odds are, the statistics show, that them getting their very first job in their careers is very low. And that's perpetuating the 60 to 70% unemployment rate among people with disabilities in this country, is these youngsters not having a chance to get their first job when they're teenagers. The BEP and unifying our rehab counselors with our vendors is one way, it's a small way, but it's one way of giving some of these kids that very, very badly needed first step. These opportunities are going to serve those kids well as they go now to their second job and their third job and eventually their careers. So you guys who have posted some of our kids, you are doing something for our futures that I can appreciate from the global perspective of the massive unemployment rate out there. You guys can appreciate because you're with these kids and you see how they grow, like Joni has and others have. And so I just want you to know how much I appreciate what you are doing for these kids. Give yourselves a hand for that. Deb is going to tell you some really positive things about how the program is going. There's a lot of stuff on the fire. The program itself is improving internally in terms of how it does what it does. It's a slow process to take a program and raise it to the next level. It's a slow process to reverse trends that have happened over many, many years. I can tell you that many of the trends that people feel bad about, where we still have some glitches, are stopping. We're bringing them to a halt. We're not going in the wrong direction. We're bringing them to a halt, and some of them are moving back in the positive direction. It's kind of like the old adage about turning a battleship. You better decide, an hour ahead of time if you want that ship to turn, because it's really hard to take something big and massive like that that's going in a direction and get it to turn in a different direction. So just on a global level, there are a lot of changes happening, many changes happening. State service is a very difficult place to be these days. I'm going to say government service is a very difficult place. You know, the economic downturn is affecting all of you, your businesses. Well, it also affects your government. So to the extent that we can help each other, we've gone well better, because we're all in this together right now. And it's very tough time. We're keeping our staffing levels up as best we can. We're making improvements in the staffing. We're making changes in our procedures. And like I said, Deb is going to have some positive things to say to you about how the program is going. I want to bring up one little piece that she is allowed to touch upon, which is you've all heard about the American the Recovery Act, ARRA, which you know is a stimulus package, the stimulus money coming to different states. But we've got stimulus money coming to California. I think the paperwork transmittal of the dollars actually happened a few days ago. Got to go through all sorts of things within the State Department of Finance and stuff like that before you can actually start sending the money back out. But that's all technical stuff. The money has actually started to come in. And we have some things on the concept board that still have to work their way through an approval process. So you can't, like, count on them just yet. But we've got some things that have to do with the BEP and the use of some of that stimulus money. I know Deb has had opportunities to talk to some of the stakeholders about the, you know, some of like the CBPC and folks like that. So just know, we didn't forget the program when it came to the stimulus money. With that, I'm going to say thank you. I've taken up enough of your time today, and that food is really good. I'm going to go back and have some. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony, very much. Right now, it's really interesting. We all think about how difficult it is to run our businesses. Can you imagine trying to run, a governmental agency with 112 individual vendors and businesses that are, that each one are so unique and so individualized? It has to be quite challenging, and I know Deb is under a lot of pressure to perform and to make things happen, and also the fact that she's somewhat short on staff, and it's been a tremendous burden for her. But I'll tell you one thing, though. I've heard a lot of things about Deb, and that is that she truly is dedicated. She is putting in many, many hours. I think Tony has to kick her out of the office once in a while to tell her to go home and take it easy. So anyway, with that, let me introduce you to Deb Meyer, our program manager for BEP.
Thank you, David. After that, I think I should just go home now because I'm working too hard. How's that? Well, it's been 9.5 months since I started, and I realized today that you can't actually move a mountain with a shovel. That's what I've learned so far. However, with that shovel, we have moved awesome. We've had a lot of growing pains since I started, but a lot of good things are going to start happening. The stimulus package we put in for $1.7 million worth of improvements and also new locations. Roadside rests, 5 roadside rests, all the equipment that goes with those roadside rests, and let's see what else. Oh, and the border area and Los Angeles airport. So that we will have equipment for all those locations. Concrete will be poured. Everything will be done so that we will have 7 new locations for vendors. That was the big one. The next one was actually something that I know that I need, which is BEP management software, so that we actually have data in one location that is accessible and that you can also get without the pain that I have to go through to find numbers. And speaking of numbers, I actually now have your set-aside fund numbers in my head. I ran them all yesterday, and we are on pace to actually make an extra $500,000 in our fund. What happened was we're actually getting approximately the same amount of set-aside funds from last year, which is amazing in this time. So you guys are doing a great job. So here's to you. But we're also finding out that some vendors are actually paying what they've owed us before. So we're about... we're over 100% of what we budgeted for, what we would receive for set-aside funds for prior years. So we're doing great on that. We're getting people to pay into the set-aside fund, which seemed to be a problem before. And turning in MORs, accounts receivable, they're changing the processes. If anybody knows that if you haven't paid, you get a letter, and then you also get a letter from the BEC. And that process seems to be working so that everybody is aware that there is a problem with fees or whatever. Maybe it's your business. And then we can start addressing those problems.
In fact, on that, we've also started a pilot project for doing low performing locations, which pulls in every one of you to assist in that, doing marketing, looking at the entire location, not just you as a vendor, not just the building, but putting in an entire package of how is this location operating. Hi, Beth. I think I speak really loud anyway, so the microphone is kind of scaring me, but okay. So, because we really need to address low-performing locations, you know, with new opportunities, with changing the way we do business. Cafeterias are just going out. You can ask the GSA, our favorite federal program, that how they're doing with their cafeterias, and you will find that they're not very successful these days. So changing the way we do business, again, that's taking a shovel and trying to move a mountain. But we have to start working with our building managers, with the consultants, and really figuring out how we can be more successful. And I think that we're on that path, but, you know, nothing in state service happens overnight. But it is happening. So that's the best thing. The next thing I'd like to talk about is the educational conference. It's going to happen October 9th through the 11th. And I think you all will be excited, so I'm going to announce it right now. Mark it on your calendar. It's going to be in L.A., and you will have it. Okay? And that's my guarantee. I've already spoken with the budget department and then told them exactly what I'm going to do and how I'm going to do it with the money. And they have agreed, and so we will do it. And hopefully we'll all learn a lot. Let's see. As far as the issue with the Department of Energy, Mr. Harmon pointed out that so graciously to me how our department might have failed in its activities. However, comma.
That was before you, actually.
Oh, so. So I know that. The last 3 years, we have received commissions from Sandia, which is next door to Lawrence Livermore, vending machine commission. That's all I know about it. And obviously, I'm not happy with the entire Department of Energy's processes. They refuse to answer us. We've sent letters. I've sent 3 letters already. And so the next letter is from Mr. Candela. And we will be pursuing any type of action required in order to get the Department of Energy to understand our priority. Okay? So just to settle that one right down. The next one is federal prisons. As of this week, Ms. Fleming, who is the dog with a bone, who... and I like to tell her that all the time. there is nothing that's left unturned for her. She continually looks at opportunities. Yet this past week, she went. It wasn't last week. She went to Victorville to the federal prison, in which we are showing our presence, and we're working on actually moving into that prison based on the calculations and the numbers that we get. Currently, there were 4,000 actual prisoners in that location, and so we're not sure of the numbers yet, but it is definitely a location in which we will pursue. The cool thing about the stimulus package is not only will we have the 7 locations for new vendors, we will also be able to then use the money that we would have budgeted for new projects. Using our own money to do those 7 projects, we don't have to do that. So the 2 things that I'm looking at right now is how many locations, federal prisons, whatever, might we be able to get into this coming year, and also who needs a remodel? I feel sorry for you guys sometimes. I mean, I walk into locations and I feel like I've stepped back into the 60s. Brandon's location is not one of those cases. Exactly. And I really think that we need to start prioritizing how we can better improve the locations that we have. And that's all also a part of the low performing. So I'd like to take, I'm going to work with CVPC Fiscal Committee, going over next year's budget to see what we can do to remodel locations. And because there was no funding whatsoever this year for remodels. So I didn't even have a line item amount for remodels this year. So that, I think, is going to be fun. I might have to throw Joanne Fleming, who is a remodel queen, into that too, but she doesn't know that yet. I've gone to Fresno, I've gone to San Francisco, Oakland, and I'm going down to San Diego this coming week to actually look at potential locations. We're going to do a mass tour. My job, as I was told by Joanne, is that I get to look for the flags. So any flag, United States and California flag that's flying, we're going to visit that location to verify that we have presence in there. And we did that with Fresno, and I've just been to San Francisco, but that's a tough city. I'll just call it that, and we'll get to that one next. But I know that Fresno is looking up. We've got three additional locations, plus Vending Machine Commission, since we went down there in October. And that's just in those, in the matter of 6 months that we've been able to get the General Services Administration. We've changed their philosophy. I've met with GSA, the new Pacific Rim director, on establishing a better relationship with the federal government as far as our priority in trying to make a difference and let them know that we don't give up any rights. We have priority over every building in this state. And no matter how hard they try to avoid, they're not going to anymore. And they know that now. There's tons of opportunities out there, and I see a lot of low-performing locations that maybe we shouldn't be there, and we should actually be in locations where you guys are going to be the most successful. I don't feel that any of you should make any less money than I do. So, on that note...
Federal prisons, I cover federal prisons.
Oh, a post office contract.
Thank you, Laura.
We are currently in the process of developing, well, actually, we've developed it now with the assistance of CVPC, the QLDC, and a postal vending machine commission contract that we're getting ready to send to the federal contact for their signature. So it's going to entail the entire state, in which they will no longer get to live in their own little world either. And hopefully that is going to increase our vending machine commissions, which means that then we can move all of our health care benefit costs and hopefully pay for all the health care benefit costs through the vending machine commissions. I mean, that is my goal. I want to be able to pay for all of your health care through the vending machine commission. Okay? And if we continue to do our jobs in getting the commissions and, the dog with the bone continues her path, I think that in the coming year, especially with the post office contract, we'll be able to do that for the next year. Not this year. It's not going to happen in this fiscal year. Because first we've got to get the money in there to ensure that you're always going to be covered. Department of Defense.
God, you're good.
Oh, God, I got a straight man over here. Keep me in line. the Department of Defense, I don't know if you're... Let's see. There's one person here that has a current contract. The federal government has required us to change the way we do reporting for DOD contracts, which is going to come down, which means we have to do new regulations, which I was hoping we wouldn't have to. But their reporting requirements are totally different. They have the same kind of line items, but with different names. So, unfortunately, we'll be working with CBPC on developing new DOD contracts. We're also looking at vending machines and everything else on bases. I have to tell you, though, you know, I am 22 years in the Air Force, and I know that every time I put 50 cents into that vending machine, I was going to get a Coke out. And it meant that that money actually went back into our own squadron money. So I'm not the best one to go after it, but I know.
I know a couple vendors that would be happy to go for you.
Exactly. So I've let I've paid for a lot of holiday parties at the
Yeah, but your holiday parties would support a family or two.
And so I threw away my 22 years of dedication to the service and understand that we have a priority. And and so we're actually looking at veterans' hospitals. We've been there. We went to Fresno and saw that operation. I mean, we're really looking at all of our opportunities right now. And again, it has to come down with staffing and money. I hope to get with Joanne a plan of everything that we've seen, everything that we look at, and so that y'all can decide where we move next with all the opportunities. But in reality, you know, there's only so many of us, and there's only so many staff. So the idea is going to be to pick the most lucrative, do vending machine commissions, whatever it takes in the meantime. But I want good staff to assist, and I also would love to have all you good vendors in awesome locations. And John, and of course John Friesen has a question.
Okay, wait a minute, John. Oh. Okay.
If I can make Tony groan, but it was CCB who sponsored legislation on two occasions to have a vendor loan program. Can you explain to us what's going to be done about that?
Actually, you need to go to Tony Candela. You know, John, you bring up things. It's like, do you have a little microphone in?
Okay, John, I will groan. Okay, vendor, the law got passed. Vendor loan program does exist. We have actually told the vendors in various ways that it does exist, but no one has come forward, as far as we know, no one has come forward to ask for a loan. And in fact, we were just in conversation about this not more than a week ago to say we need to just go back out there and let the vendors know what it is they actually have to do to get a loan. Just so you guys know, Senator Soto, I think it was Senator Soto, she just passed away. May she rest in peace. But not before she did two things. One, got the first law passed way back in 2000, 2001, somewhere right in there, which empowered the DOR to do something with $100,000 that was dropped in our lap to something called the Healdsman Trust. And all the Healdsman Trust said was, we would like to give the Department of Rehabilitation $100,000 to do good things for the blind. That's all it said. And the DOR decided, why don't we create a vendor loan program, because there had been one, but it got ruled illegal by the IRS, and we had to stop. I think we were using DOR federal dollars for the loan program, and that was it was illegal to do that, so we had to stop doing that. And so there this money gets dropped into our lap. They said, let's do a vendor loan program. They passed the law, but it didn't give the DOR the tools to administer this program. All these years go by, CBPC, bless their hearts, I mean this seriously, stayed on our case. After a while, we got another law passed. Senator Soto backed it. And so now what we have is, we don't really have a loan program yet. Well, this $100,000, by the way, has now evolved to about $107,000, what with all the interest has been getting over the last
8 years. So we don't have a loan program per se. What we have is what we call an interest buy-down program. So instead of lending out maybe 10 loans and blowing the entire $100,000, you know, assuming a certain level of defaults on some of these loans, and losing after maybe 1 or 2 years the entire $100,000, end of story, end of loan program. Now what we have is you go out to any bank that you want, you get a business loan. You convince the bank, they give you your loan. The interest rate might be 10%, let's just say. We will use some of the $100,000 to get that interest rate down to 8%. Or we'll spend up to $5,000 of the money to get it down as far as we can get it. But we have a cap of no more than $5,000. What we will do in the next couple of weeks is get a new set of instructions out to everybody. But the program exists, but it's not a loan program anymore. It's an interest buy-down. You still got to go to a bank and get a loan under the prevailing interest rates. And you can get it for as much money as you need to borrow, as much money as they're willing to lend you. We're just going to have a limit on how much we can use to buy down your interest. But the goal is to knock it down by 2% or so. And so to answer John's question, what happened to it? First thing that happened to it is it morphed. It's no longer a loan program. It's an interest buy-down. Second thing is, I don't think the instructions went out very well the first time because we haven't had any takers yet. And I bet you people in this room are going to say, I never heard about it. So I think that's what happens. You can get the proper set of instructions out. Okay, that's the end of my long speech. Hey, now, John, do you have another question? Okay, thank you. Thank you, John.
We've got anybody else?
I got one more thing that the training program. I think you all will be very thrilled with the training program that's coming on board. Now, with the self-employment rules and regulations, we have been able to actually cut down the training program by 3 months. ServSafe is now online, and the students will do a self-study before they even come into class, and they will be proctored at their rehab locations in their actual field offices wherever they're located instead of having to come up to Sacramento and use 3 weeks of their time here in training. They'll actually have it done before they get here. They will start on their National Restaurant Association certification also online before they're there. They'll be taking business courses prior to entering. The first 15 now won't. They'll get the ServSafe done, but now that we're meeting with the counselors so that they know and actually have a curriculum set up for anyone who wants to be in our program so that they get started on that immediately. So instead of sitting around waiting for a class, you'll automatically just start moving right into how to be a vendor. And so the next portion of that is actually going to be a certifying OJT program. So that you will have to get things signed off. It will be a structured on-the-job training, and so that you are ready to actually be vendors once you get out of the program and your license, instead of being lost and not knowing. It's going to be more of a close-knit assist you to the best of your ability. We're also working on a relationship with the small business centers, small business development centers in all the different cities, and they have currently volunteered to assist current vendors in trainings and small business techniques that they've used. They're mainly retired business people, and they volunteer their time. So that's one of the bright things that you guys will actually be able to use also. So if you're having problems and unsure, you get some of the best service from people who've done it their entire lives. So I just wanted to throw that in. And I want you all to think about potential educational conference, things that you'd like to learn, and send it to Joni, I think. No. No. I got her. I got her. Please send any of those ideas to me so that we can work on developing a good 3 days of training for you. And let's see what else.
Wait a minute. David has a question.
I guess we have questions now.
Hold on.
Yeah, this question is directed to Tony. And recently, RSVC sent, I think, 3 questions that we asked Tony. And because of the economy the way it is and how there's a tremendous downturn in the economy. A lot of people are hanging on to their money, or they're helping other family members that have lost jobs. And I know my business has gone down, fairly significantly. The 3 questions that we asked Tony was, is there a possibility that there could be a moratorium on paying fees from 3 to 6 months? I think that would help the vendors, pull out of the downturn and just try to recover somewhat from that situation. The other question, too, that we asked him was the retirement program. Many of us are involved with our retirement program, and some of us really have a significant amount of money in the retirement program. And was there a possibility of vendors attaining some money, not all of it, obviously, or even 50%, but just some money in order to help regain some economic stability? So I just wanted to ask Tony if there's any further thoughts or development on these ideas.
Okay, I'm coming to Tony.
David, if you think of the third one, remind me, you said 3. So far we got 2. I do remember the 2 also. We'll go with those. Okay, the first one was the moratorium on collecting a fee. So my immediate response back was that this is something that the program manager and the policy committee have to talk about. The thoughts that I had on the subject were the way that fees are calculated now kind of rises and falls with your net profit, and so the way the system is set up now, if your net profit dropped to 0, you would just not pay fee. If you had if it lowered a little bit, you would pay less anyway. So my thought was the system, if it's working properly, is designed to kind of float up and down with how you're all doing. And I would think that would take care of the matter, but I just said to Deb, I can't judge this one. These guys have asked, and let's just talk it through. So I'm sure that, that's something that will happen. Deb will talk to the policy committee about it. Regarding the pension, first thing is we have a really a good company who's managing the funds for us out at Prudential. I preface my answers by saying that because they've got a very large core of experts in this business. God knows there must be 1,000 curveballs to this business that I have no idea about. But the few that I have understood in the transitioning of the contract from the old bank to the new bank, as it were, from the old company to the new company, I've learned a lot. So what we have is we have organized our process whereby if somebody asks for a dispersal of funds to them from their pension fund, we have a team that I put together that's GEP staff, myself, and we have legal counsel who reviews everything that we decide to make sure we stay within the law to review each one of the requests. And every single one of the requests for early withdrawal of funds from the pension fund is reviewed on an individual basis. It's really about a case analysis basis. I've even communicated with some of the folks who've requested funds to ask them some questions that I know go toward what the allowable answer is, both within the law and within the way the way pension systems are run in general and the particular rules of the Prudential. But I go back to my first statement, which I have tremendous confidence and I think I have to have it because I don't know this business very well. I have tremendous confidence in the Prudential to be an extremely professional organization in terms of knowing what they can do. And I have a humanitarian streak in me, and then I have experts around. Yeah, and Deb has to like bop me on the head once in a while to not be like overly generous and a bleeding heart and all that stuff. And so that's why I put myself at the top of the decision chain. It's my decision in the end, and I have the authority to make it by law. So then I need my staff to correct me when I'm wrong and to balance me out. So what I feel is we have a process in place that that has, at its heart, has a humanitarian flair, and then deeper down has its bureaucratic side to it as well. So we will review. We will give you guys. You have made request answers. And the other thing, I don't want time to go by anymore than between when a request is made and you give an answer, because some of you guys might be in big trouble and we could just be waiting too long to do it.
And I want to add to that, based on the documentation that we've received so far for requests, it doesn't appear that the documentation is completed correctly. If anyone in this room is in this situation, or if you know someone, please make sure that they contact the Prudential. There's a 1-800 number, and go through the paperwork with Prudential. If there's any circumstances, they are the experts, and when we get that paperwork, if it's not filled out correctly, we can't process it. So that would slow you down too.
Yeah, Deb, we've already done that. The Prudential, their current policy is extremely severe in that, you know, we did the line by line, and basically, my mind just has gone blank, but if you have a fire, you know, if your business is destroyed by a fire,
right?
If you have insurance, then obviously, you know, you don't need to file for Prudential.
Unforeseen.
Yeah, unforeseen, but it's very, very restrictive. That's why RSCC and some individuals have contacted Tony, because we wanted to see if he could go beyond the Prudential basic requirement, because it's very severe, and ultimately the department, they are the trustees of the Prudential, and I understand that they need to you know, adhere to policy and things like that, but there needs to be consideration of expanding the Prudential, you know, basic requirement.
If Prudential or the department is basing their decision on your MOR, it's completely erroneous, because your MOR is not real. It doesn't really show what your business is doing. It's just a convenient form to fill out for the department. You're only interested in a few lines on that MOR that you turn in. Now, another question.
I hate to differ with you. I'm concerned with every single line on the MOR.
We're not saying that it's you. We're talking about the IRS, the accounting
department.
Totally
different.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Anyway, 18 years ago, our program in California was put on a budget. We put on a budget. And ever since then, we've had difficulty slowly strangling us, limiting us on purchases, and redevelopment, new materials, whatever. And we know that the fees that the vendors pay can't be touched. That remains the same. Whatever that amount is, it comes in monthly or annually. The question I have is, who is the person that sits in accounting that brings up the arbitrary number of what our budget's going to be? They're not using set-aside funds anymore.
I don't know where the set aside funds went, the matching funds. I don't know where they went.
That is not a true statement. I will send you all, since I now did the math, I will send you the actual current budget for this year, plus our actual expenditures, and you'll see how we're using the money, and it's more than the set-aside funds that come in each year.
What he's saying is that we do not know, and we need to know.
I am going to share that with you as soon as I get back home.
In a form,
I have the numbers.
In a form that can be read on the computer.
Right.
Or that can be read by somebody.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Yes, ma'am.
That would be, Debbie.
I completed
that
all those numbers
great.
Yesterday. So.
Okay.
John Friesen has a question.
Hi, John. Again.
Professor John.
Yes.
It's been several years since the administration of DEP has sat down with the vendor to discuss staffing levels, and I was wondering what your thoughts were about staffing level changes now with the structure of the program, and if you see that as an upcoming possibility.
I definitely see the need for a change in the staffing structure. Our biggest dilemma as far as staffing is that we had the only classifications in the state were supervising business enterprise consultant, business enterprise consultant, assistant business enterprise program, assistant manager, and then there was the my position, whatever the title of that was. And they were all single classifications. No one else in the state has that classification. Currently, my goal is to eliminate that classification. I don't feel that it's appropriate. We have numerous people in the state of California who are qualified with business backgrounds and with the amount of training and understanding of college, you know, going and being in business that are willing to work in this program. What I will do is change to a classification that fits the entire state of California. So there won't be an exam specific for BEP anymore, because that gives us a bigger pool of candidates who are more qualified to do the job. And they will continue to have a working title of business enterprise consultant. The working titles won't change. I see the need for, instead of supervising BEC, they should be managers. And of course, that I'm fighting, but I hope to win. we have been in talks with our fiscal people, and so far it's a challenge. I'll just leave it at that, and I will be working closely with CVPC regarding the new structure, getting more staffing in out in the field. I think it's a huge need. I don't think that we have enough people out there that really help.
Do you think that we could rename the BEC something else, because they don't consult with us? They either tell us or whatever, but they don't consult. They do what they consult, they say, or you do what they say, and that's it. So I think maybe we won't call them friends either. Let's call them, what if we call them, no, be nice, but I mean something nice, but something
other
than consulting.
How about we teach them how to consult?
That would be good.
Okay, and then
we
leave that working title alone, because really, and in fact, by the way, just to let you all know that with my budget, just for administrative things, I cut down on a lot of general expenses, and I've allocated $20,000 for training for our BEC. So in the next 6 months, they will be taking courses. Every one of them is going to take a customer service course.
And then are you going to explain to them that we are their customers?
I'm hoping that the customer service course will assist in my my training them in which you are my customer. Yeah.
We could plan a dinner in the dark.
There you go. Go ahead.
Hi, Deb. I was at a meeting, just about 9 months ago. You had mentioned when they didn't have a training class this past year that the BECs and SBECs were going to be going through a training with Mr. Shira to standardize their approach so they would all work with us with the same information.
That will happen in May. They're going to get a refresher on all the regulations. They're going to go over MOR standards, what to look for, how to assist you in actually being better business people, and I'm working on trying to find a marketing class too.
I have a question. What is happening with the Navy bases down in San Diego? We talked about this a year ago, and I asked you what, you know, was you going to do something about that, and you said yes to me.
How cool, because I'm going down there this week, and we're going to go to the Navy bases.
There. Well, I'm talking about the ones that, are where Ron is.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, what that five, that three is the ones that I was asking about a year ago.
Oh. Well, I don't have an answer for that.
I'll come out and see you next week.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do actually is going to go to the military installations next week in San Diego. We've gotten some information, and like I said, I've given the dog the bone, and she's going to run with it. So we're going to work as hard as we can to get on those Navy bases and get on military installations. You know, I've numerous times, you know, I can get on any military base, and I know there's a Burger King, there's a Robin Hood, there's a Frank's or whatever, and they're on every base.
Mm-hmm.
And
My question is basically on the vending repairs and things of that nature. If you actually change your thinking on how to get a better company to bid.
Oh, I've changed a lot of thinking. It doesn't mean that it works with the state procurement process, unfortunately. What I need actually from the vendors now, I found out, because I know the issues with the service contract. And I have actually personally met with one of the companies and pointed out everything that we are unhappy with them. They were put on notice. They really haven't changed their process at all. And what I need is complaints from the vendors themselves. Any email that you can give me. I found out because what I wanted to do was get rid of that contractor, and unfortunately I was told by the contracting unit that I didn't have enough supporting documentation to eliminate that contractor. So hence the reason why I've started making my staff, anytime there's a complaint, they're writing it down now, and I need you to do the same. I find it very irritating to know that you've got a vending machine out there and it's been 2.5 months and you haven't gotten it fixed. But, you know, okay, so that's my standard. If I get really upset with that, just think about how upset I really am by finding out that it's over a year. I think it's unacceptable. And the only way that I can get rid of those, that contractor, because of the bidding process, as long as they continue to low bid, I have to show documentation why I'm not going to take them as the bid. I mean, if I have the documentation to support that, I can say sorry, and even though you're the lowest bidder, but I have to have justification. And we all know who that vendor is. And so, you know, needless to say, I have been meeting. So, hi, Andy.
Hi, Deb.
What are you going
to
do now?
Well, I've got to regress for a little bit, and I would like to go back to Tony because I have a question on that vendor loan program.
that is now not a vendor loan program, but a buy-down. Now, I would think that as a loan program, if we start out with X amount of dollars, we loan X amount of dollars, that money gets repaid, and it's a perpetuating pot of money. Whereas it sounds now, once the money is spent, it's gone. Is that true? How do we get that? If you buy down,
get the microphone.
Down the loan for me, how does the program get the money back?
Thank you, Andrew, for that question. The original way it was set up was what was destined to wipe the program out within a year and a half to 2 years, based on expected default rates, things of that nature, the kinds of money vendors would need to borrow, some of the restrictions that were put on what you could do with that money. I remember there was a big fight about, could somebody buy a truck? So they could run their lending issues out with a driver more easily or more effectively. Now, there's all that stuff that was restricting it, but the prognostication was that even if people had the ability, which it did not, to do a vendor loan program, we wiped the money out very quickly. This new way, what happens is we put out the money to buy down the interest rate. The vendor starts repaying the bank their loan, and the bank starts giving us back certain amounts of money. There is a point where, for example, if somebody pays their loan back and there's any leftover interest money, let's say we gave them $5,000, but only $4,000 of it was used to buy down the interest because they paid the loan back so fast, you get the $1,000 back. If a vendor defaults on a loan, the bank now is the one that's working with the vendor about the default. Whatever we paid for the interest buy down, we get the money back right away. There is a point where, unless there's new infusions of money, we will, if everything goes right, we will spend the money faster than it's coming in. There is a point where we will run out of money. But it's going to take way, 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 way longer to wipe that money out this way than the old way. But, unless there's new infusions of money, sure enough, yeah, you're going to run it out eventually.
It was just a response back to Deb. Deb, it's much easier for the vendors to fill out a survey than it is for you to try to have them give you the correct answers if you can review what you want the vendors to nail down and make it in a survey. There's no reason why when a service person comes out, okay, that the vendor couldn't send a survey back with the service call each time.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have two things that I thought of. I want to thank Hazel and Janice for helping us create the email. We've got about 90, I think, people
about
now.
About 90.
Yeah, it's awesome. It gets you guys information immediately. Debbie, please email people. I'm not pointing fingers. She doesn't have an email address. And
hey, if you've changed your email address, because there's a few of you that have.
Ron Long.
Yeah, Ron Long. You little rascal, you. anyway, if you've changed your email address, please let us know, because we're distributing a lot of important information. Plus, in the next couple of weeks, Joni's going to be sending out a flyer about the educational conference in October. And it could go by email, yes. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And we can pick out the guys that don't have the correct email address and then maybe send a flyer to them as well. But that's coming out so that you guys can make sure that you reserve your dates for that conference, because it really is an important, and it's a good conference. it's, you know, and it, and it, it's really good. So,
and but on that note, could you also maybe potentially be able to send the Vendoscope via email instead
of
CDs?
Oh yes. Oh, that's what I'm. That's what I. Oh, you missed it.
Oh, I didn't get one.
Oh, oh, because
I got the hard copy yesterday.
You got the hard copy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You just have to let me know that you want that email version.
Okay.
And I don't know, Tony. Do you want the text accessible, or do you want the email large print version, or the regular one? The text accessible. Oh. Oh. Yeah. If they want to download to the note taker, we can do that.
Okay.
Yeah. David, can I just...
Thank you for letting me speak.
Oh,
Deb.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. We do want to thank Tony and Deb. It kind of put them their feet to the fire, and they're sitting on the hot seat. But we are all very professional, and we know, you know, that we can respect one another and just be honest with one another and just answer. So we do appreciate Tony and Deb for being here.
Absolutely. Oh, I could do that, Roy.
Okay.
I just want to remind you guys, I do have some CDs of the Vendoscope here and some cassettes. So if you'd like a CD of it, I've got some here. But also, before you leave, if you've got a new email address, Ron, then let me know so that we can send out that important information. Oh, we also, say it again. Marty? Okay.
Marty, yeah.
We've got you as, you know, Rascal.
Is that littlerascalron.com?
We have a little drawing here. Gina, where's the bank? You know how I went around and gave you all the little numbers? I think everybody has a number that's here. Okay, just pull a number, Gina, quickly. Oh. She just looked for the number here. Okay. Have Deb pull it out. Oh, you're going to trust her?
Nope. There's no braille on that.
Hey, Ron, I think one of my...
All right. That'll get Joni up on time every
morning.
It's
a traveling alarm clock that talks.
Randolph Shepherd, Vendors of America. Yeah.
By the way, guys, okay. You know, Jennings Randolph, they're building a mall. On the mall, they're building a building, and it's going to be called the Jennings Randolph Institute for Peace. And Randolph Shepherd, Vendors of America are also working to get an office in that building. Because as people visit that building, they will see an office of Randolph Shepherd Vendors and be able to go in and find out all about our program throughout the nation. And that'll be really, really good.
Okay, we have two more of the alarm clocks. Go ahead, Gina.
Joni's not sharing with Paul. Yeah. Thank you, Richard, for coming. See you later. Oh, 21. Who got 21?
21.
Oh, Brandon Wilcox got it. Here, I can hand it. Get the next number. Okay, this
number.
One goes to Brandon Wilcox. You got to start traveling now.
On the road again. On the road again. No boiling now.
13 was Andy.
Yeah. Andy.
Here we go.
All right. Well, listen, y'all. Our next RSVC luncheon will be in Los Angeles in October.
No, I think it's Fresno.
Oh, that's right. It is, huh?
Fresno.
Fresno. The beautiful city of Fresno. CCB. No.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Gina, it's in Fresno.
CCB, huh? Our RSVC luncheon will be in Fresno. It's still going to be an October artist. Okay. Artist said it's going to be October 29th through the 1st of October. So that's November, I mean. That'll be the next RSVC luncheon in conjunction with the California Council of the Blind Convention. I want to thank you all for coming. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Hey, listen, guys. There's an open invitation to Mickey Mouse World this summer. Randall Shepherd Vendors of America, along with the American Council of the Blind, their annual convention is July 4th through the 11th in Orlando, Florida. So could you write off the trip and come and have some fun and meet vendors throughout the nation, plus go to Mickey Mouse World? I mean, you know, what's better than that? So remember those days. Look in the vendor scope. It'll tell you all about it, how to go to the ACB website, our website, and register if you want. So Janice and John, I think, should come. Florida. You don't do Florida in July. That's the only thing. I saw that and went, Florida in July? You know. But anyway, you're welcome to stick around and talk to each other or whatever. And again, thank you for coming.